This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. No Danny today. Pete is in on this Football Friday. Mike Jones of USA Today Sports joins us at 1. Hub Arkish, who covers the Bears in the National Football League, longtime Pro Football Weekly writer, is on the show today at 1:30. Today's show presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. Let's kick off the Beltway Blitz. Redskins Bears Chris Russell will join us to break it down in just a moment. In the meantime, though, Pete, start with Chicago and Mitch Trubisky. I've used this stat a couple of times because I can't get it out of my head. Matt Nagy called 18 plays from the 46-yard line and in for Chicago, going back to this weekend in a win against Denver. 15 were runs. He doesn't trust his quarterback right now. Do you think Trubisky gets going against Washington, or will it be more of the same?
Would love to know if there's something physically going on with the quarterback that they're not telling us, because to me that's the only reason why you call that demonstratively a different game, where you call 15 out of 18 plays on the ground. Is something physically wrong with the quarterback? Because if there isn't, we're going to find out if there isn't this week. Because how do you beat Washington? You attack them down the field, and we'll see if they try to go that route this week.
The Bears, from a pure weapon standpoint, don't have a whole lot you've got to worry about that they're using all that frequently. So in the passing game, Allen Robinson's the guy. He gets all their targets. He gets all their touches as a wide receiver. Next in line would be Anthony Miller, who's got 2 grabs so far this season. They smoke out some bubbles occasionally to Taylor Gabriel. They got to watch in the running game out of the backfield as a receiver's Tarik Cohen, but he's not getting any rushes right now.
Might be one of the most underutilized weapons in the National Football League.
Yeah, they've tabled Mike Davis, and they've gone to David Montgomery in the running game. Let's bring in Chris Russell for a couple of thoughts on the Skins. As it comes to Monday night, what would you do defensively to try to game plan against Chicago's O?
Well, I mean, to me, I think you're going to see a much more aggressive game plan from a blitz perspective and from, you know, maybe twists and stunts and, you know, all that than we've seen so far in the first 2 games, even if they're still short Jonathan Allen, even if they're still short Quentin Dunbar, which is the expectation, maybe even Fabian Moreau, just because, you know, when Jay has addressed this issue all this week, and Jay is usually transparent about his frustrations, as we've all come to find out, he's mentioned specifically they need to be more aggressive. They need to be more, gamble a little bit more, because clearly being conservative against Philadelphia and Dallas wasn't working. Now, the difference is, for me, and I've been saying this since last Sunday's postgame show, is they're going to be more aggressive because they can be more aggressive, because they don't think Mitch Trubisky, and they're right, can hurt them as bad as Dak Prescott and the Cowboys and Carson Wentz and the Eagles, not only by making plays, but also by play extension. And that's the only fear that I have, is that he extends a play like he did to Allen Robinson on the final drive last week, and then something breaks down on the back end.
Chris, let's talk about it from this perspective. We know coming into the season, we were sold the bill of goods that it would be the Redskins' defense, and if the offense could just get to 21 to 24 points a game, they'd be in good shape. Let me ask you this. Can the offense get to 21 to 24 points against this Bears defense coming up this week?
I don't think so, Pete. I have no idea how they do that, quite honestly. I mean, I've kind of felt this is a 13 to 17 point tight game for the Redskins. Now, maybe they get a pick six and that helps, or a sack, fumble,
Chris, who's going to get a pick six for them? Who?
I mean, I guess the only guy that has shown an ability to do that a little bit is Monte Nicholson in the preseason, and he had the interception last week, but even he's dealing with a foot. So, I mean, listen, we all know, you know, something can happen weird along the way, but to your point, you're right. They don't have enough of those dynamic difference makers on the defensive side of the ball to level out the mistakes and the problems that they've had on defense. And that's been, you know, to me, that's been the one big thing, and that's why that interception early last week against Dak was so important, was because at least you felt like, okay, if we're going to get gassed a little, if we're going to give up some big plays, we've got to level it out with turnovers. And they've gotten one turnover, one, in addition to no pass rush or no sustained pass rush in 2 weeks. But back to the Redskins offense, they're not going to be able to run the football against this front seven. I don't even know if they're going to be able to naturally screen Chris Thompson style, or, you know, however else you want to dial it up. Even Adrian Peterson, who had a big third and two screen last week, they're not going to be able to do that.
Well, then do you want to run the ball unsuccessfully, or do you want to try to spread them out and throw it short?
No, Jeeps, I'm with you. I want to spread them out a little bit, even though that exposes me in pass protection. I got to thin out that box, and I've got to try and throw it quick. Three-step drops if I'm under center. If I'm not a pistol, it's that one-step kind of flip your hips and get rid of the football and get it into space against this secondary. I know they've got talent in the secondary, but that's the weakness of the Chicago Bear defense, the only thing I think you can attack.
By the way, I'll bet you loved AFC South football last night. The Titans were down 17-0 with a few minutes to go in the third quarter. They take over first and 10 from their own 25. On that drive, they had four first and 10s, and they ran for 0, 2, 1, and minus 1.
Yeah, brother, you know, here's the thing. I don't love that, but here's the thing, and this is what Warren Sharp refuses to acknowledge, and I love Warren Sharp. Their quarterback sucks. Their quarterback is awful. This is why teams run the ball in these spots, and this is why I think the Redskins have run the ball frustratingly, if that's a word to you and Danny and others and the analytics guys, is because they don't trust their quarterback to make a play and to beat Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Phillip Rivers or Ben Roethlisberger. That's why.
Chris, appreciate the time, buddy. Enjoy your trip
out
west. See you later. Let's talk Nationals. Jesse Dougherty of the Washington Post soliciting your questions right now on Twitter while he waits for his hotel room in Miami. Jesse, this question from Pete in Washington, D.C. What does Davey Martinez coming back to the club tonight mean for this team going into its final road series of the regular season?
I think it's a boost. I mean, you never want to be without your manager, the voice you've had all year. And, you know, Davey's was a big part of this team's turnaround. And I think his common presence day to day is important to how this team functions. And when you sort of pull out, it's sort of like a Jenga tower. I mean, when you pull out a big piece like that, I mean, I don't think everything falls apart or collapses. I mean, you still can play the game, and it's not like, you know, Davey's the ace or anything like that. But I think it matters. And him coming back is, one, just good for him health-wise. And I think that lifts everybody's spirits. You're not worrying about, you know, your manager's condition. And then two, from a baseball perspective, I mean, it certainly can't hurt having that guy in the dugout who you're used to.
Anibal Sanchez has been sensational last couple times out. First time he's gone 7 innings and back-to-back starts in 3 years. What have you seen that you liked?
Yeah, I mean, I think with him, it's the thing we said all year, but when he can mix all his pitches, he's really effective. But even more than that, I think when he's gotten in trouble, what you see is his pitch count spike early on. And when he gets up to 40, 50 pitches in 2-3 innings, that's especially bad for him. It's not good for anybody, but it's especially bad for him because now he has to attack hitters a little differently. He has to be a little more precise. Whereas when he can sort of, like, when he's ahead and, you know, he's at a low pitch count in the fifth or sixth, this is a guy who can pull out a pitch you haven't seen yet in the game the third time he's facing you because he has 7 options. So he can sort of nitpick. He can throw balls in the dirt. He can be off the plate. He can risk maybe issuing a walk, you know, at the expense of getting you to chase something that he wants. So I think if you see an early pitch count tonight, an early low pitch count, then you'll know that he's going to have a good outing because he just gets so much harder to face later on when he has the expense of being able to use 5 or 6 pitches in a given at bat.
Jesse, Grant and I were speculating earlier with the potential maybe of a Rowdy Reed going with Austin Voth on Sunday, but otherwise, is there anything that's going to prevent Yan Gomes from catching 20 of the last 21 games for the Nationals here?
Yeah, I mean, that's I think you're probably right. I think it's the Austin Voth starts. The other one I don't think Yan Gomes will catch both legs of the doubleheader. So whoever gets the other split start there, whether it's Eric Fetty, Jeremy Hellickson, one of those guys, I would guess that either Rowdy Reed or Tres Barrera starts in that game. So you're looking at Sunday as a potential sit for Gomes with Austin Voth on the mound. You're looking at Tuesday as a potential rest because catching both games that doubleheader would be a beast. And then Voth has one more start in the rotation coming up later in the week. If things are still really tight, you could see Gomes in that spot just because you want him in the lineup as well instead of Reed or Barrera. But I think there are three chances coming up that you could see him getting a breather in the final 11 games. And that's not so bad. I mean, it's at the end of this stretch, I mean, he's done a lot. And playing 8 games of 11 is still a lot, but it's not impossible. And I think that's something he can handle.
That's your Beltway Blitz. Jesse, thanks so much, buddy. We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
Read Jesse Dougherty's work in the Washington Post. Grant and Danny with Pete in for Danny. Next on The Fan, let's get to the Redskins and the Bears in some detail for the first time today, shall we? What gives you hope that the Redskins can win? What gives you fear that they won't? We'll tackle that ahead of the top 5 NFL games of the weekend at 12:45 when we give away Nats tickets right here on G&D.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
G&D, Pete is in for Danny. 106.7 The Fan, a Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sports fans. We'll get back into the Nats in just a little bit. We've got our top 5 NFL games of the weekend coming up as well, but the Redskins and the Bears play on Monday Night Football. Washington loses. They're 0-3. And I think, Pete, if the Redskins lose on Monday night, we can stop talking about them as a possible playoff team. Now, for the record, I think a lot of people have thought from the beginning of the season they weren't going to make the playoffs. I picked them to go 6-10. But wouldn't you think at 0-3, with a matchup against New England coming up 2 weeks away, that at least for now, we could just table any conversation about them being a legitimate threat to anybody?
Only 6 teams have made it at 0-3 to the playoffs. So,
and only 12% have ever made it that went 0-2.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I mean, and granted, I know you played the Eagles, the Cowboys, and the Bears right out of the gate, but you know what? Those games count. Sorry,
and
they
the Bears,
count.
The Bears aren't that good. Now, they hung with
the
Eagles.
They were a playoff team, though, last year.
They were. They were 12-4, ran through the North, but they've been nothing like that this year. Couldn't move the ball on Green Bay, scored 3 points. And a week later, last week against Denver, were gifted a win by the officials and maybe a little bit the Broncos, but I would say more than anything else, the officials. Tip your cap. The numbers, and they're odd. I looked these up. For teams that win in Denver in September are staggering, and it sounds like, oh, that's just a dumb kind of, if you're sitting in section 400 and your name's Sally and someone at the plate is up in the seventh inning, they hit 232. But the fact is, it actually does matter because of the altitude and the temperature. Mm-hmm. Going to Denver in September, nobody wins. It's like a conditioning thing. So give the Bears a little bit of credit for that. But I think in a lot of ways, if you win, you're back on track. Being 1-2 through 3 games with that schedule is probably where you should have been. The thinking being you got to steal one of those division games probably. Then you've got the Giants, a winnable game. You could be 2-2 through 4 going into New England. That is now a pathway, isn't it, to around 500 and a competitive team in December?
At least it puts you in a position that if others fail, you're there to capitalize on their failure. And if you're the Redskins right now, that's all you're hoping to do. You've gotten off to a tough start, but you just want to continue to wiggle around to make the math in your favor if somebody else fails. And if we've seen constantly, Grant, through the years, teams fail in this league more than they're successful. So you look around the league, all the different injuries we're seeing right now, especially around the NFC with the quarterback situations, there's no question that if you could somehow win this game and get to 2-2, regardless of the New England result, you then put yourself in position to take advantage of other teams' failures. And that's all you can hope for with a schedule that at least on paper started out as tough as this one did for the Redskins.
You beat the Bears. You got a real good chance to be 3-3 through 6.
500 that would be fantastic.
Through six games with their schedule would be a massive win for
this
team.
But how do they get there, though,
Well,
Grant?
Okay, because let's just say you beat the Bears. Okay, you're 1-2. You then have the Giants. That's one of the three worst teams in football right now. Now, I'm not sitting here telling you the Redskins definitively beat New York and East Rutherford, but that is a very winnable game. So that's 2-2. You lose to New England, 2-3. You play the Dolphins that next week. That, to me, is the first game on the schedule that I will gladly bet just about anything they win. So now you're 3-3 going into a home game against San Francisco. You beat them last time they were here a couple of years ago. I'm not going to tell you again that that's a game that if you play it 10 times, you win 8 of those. San Francisco right now is 2-0. But if you take a step back and you ask yourself, if a home game against the 49ers is some daunting, insurmountable task, then what are we even talking about anyway? The idea is to get to around 9 wins and be a potential playoff team, right? If we're saying you got to be 4-3 or 3-3 to do that, then playing teams like San Francisco at home have to be wins anyway. Now, again, I had them 6-10. I personally think they lose to the Bears. I think they beat the Giants. I think they lose to the Patriots and they beat the Dolphins and then lose to the Niners. And at that point, you're probably 2-5, not 4-3. But the schedule opens up after this game. Basically, you've got a soft landing spot sans New England for the next month. You can make a little headway, but you've got to give yourself a chance to make it matter by beating the Bears. If you're 0-3, you've almost done too much damage, and we're 21 days into the season, and it's almost over already.
Well, we've sat around here being mediocre and finishing around 500 or near 500. Teams like San Francisco have been bad, and they're starting to improve because of the drafts and the trade they made for Jimmy Garoppolo. The question is, will they be healthy? Will they have any running backs left by the time they get to the Redskins? I've never seen a running back group get attacked by injury as much as San Francisco's has over the last two seasons. But my question is, the key game in all this, Grant, is the Bears. How do they win this game? And in my opinion, right now, how do the defensive players overcome what I think are trust issues right now with the potential coordinator on that side of the football? What changes can the coordinator and there are some good defensive minds on that side. I mean, Jim Tom Sula, Rob Ryan, these are guys that have had success in the past as coaches. Is there trust amongst those coaches with each other right now to come up with some sort of plan that will help the 11 guys they're running out there more often than not and the nickel packages that they're running out there stop the other team? Can they get off the field on third down? And, I mean, right now, I think there's significant issues on the with the defensive personnel trusting the defensive coaches right now.
Seems that way. They've got, to your point, though, that they've got too many credentialed, long-time established coaches to not have trust. Now, maybe their coordinator, Greg Minuski's words aren't getting through. Jay Gruden hinted at something along those lines after the game, which is a big problem. Having been around this team now as long as he has, multiple years calling the plays as the defensive coordinator. But I don't know. For me, I wonder, my focus is almost less on the defense against the Bears as it is on Case Keenum in this game. I think if Keenum plays well against Chicago, we're not going to see Dwayne Haskins for a little while. This is as good a defense as the Redskins are going to face, certainly until Minnesota right around Halloween, but possibly, depending on that Vikings game, and that's a primetime game on the road, maybe until you face like Green Bay if they keep up what they're doing in December. Now, if they keep losing, Dwayne Haskins will be on the field eventually because Dan Snyder and Bruce Allen are just going to walk into Jay's office and say, enough, play the kid. And he's going to say, but, and they're going to say, I don't care about anything, play this kid, we need people in the stadium. But if Case Keenum comes out against a Bears defense that last year might have been the best in football and through two games has not regressed at all, look at what they did to the Broncos and Joe Flacco, look at how bad the Packers looked in week one under Matt LaFleur with Aaron Rodgers, and Keenum's able to throw for 270 and a couple touchdowns, and they move the ball through the air, and Terry McLaurin's making plays, and they get Vernon Davis involved and Chris Thompson out of the backfield, and Jay Gruden schemes something up, I think that's a huge development and takeaway for the rest of the season for the Redskins, for the biggest storyline of the year, which is when do we see the quarterback? Keenum, through two games, has played really well.
That's not the problem. He hasn't the problem. It's been the secondary. It's been the overall play of the defense. Let me ask you this question,
Feel like, real quick, don't you feel like this is the game where he gets a little exposed, though?
Possibly.
And I think everybody in the country is watching.
I don't necessarily think it's his fault, because my question to you was going to be, how do they, and I know analytically their numbers aren't quite the same as the pace they were last year, but how do they keep the Bears' pass rush off of Case Keenum long enough so Terry McLaurin can clear on that post route to get down the field that they've had open in both games? It's just the only difference was Case couldn't hit McLaurin with a good throw this past week against the Cowboys like he did the opening week against the Eagles.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think they're going to be able to stop the Bears' pass rush. I think Akeem Hicks might be the best defensive lineman they've faced yet, and he's the second-best lineman on the Bears. Because Khalil Mack might be the best edge rusher they'll deal with on their schedule this year. Special. That's a Hall of Fame caliber talent early in his career. My guess is the ball just comes out of his hand quickly. Look around the league at what, say, Seattle's doing. Seattle this year has protected Russell Wilson a lot better than in years past, and everyone is praising their offensive line. When Pro Football Focus and some of these outlets that grade personnel actually says they're not performing any better. The difference is Russell Wilson is getting the ball out faster than any quarterback in the league. Russell Wilson is throwing from snap to ball out of his hand an average of 2.5 seconds. And my point in bringing this up is that's the plan for the Redskins. Everything's quick. Some of the longer developing things to Terry McLaurin, unless it's play action set up for a quarter and a half where you roll him out like they used to do with Cousins to find DeSean Jackson, you're not going to see it. I think it's going to be a lot of quick, short, fast throws. The entire game plan will be to not have him stand in the pocket with the football.
Go back to the fourth down play last week with Chris Thompson. Chris ran the route perfectly just beyond the marker, but the ball, Keenum got rid of it too fast and threw it behind him.
Yeah,
you know,
need to hit on that.
If that is what happens this week, then even that is going to be difficult for them to convert on third down situations and keep the chains moving. That play was there. Thompson ran the route properly, but because Keenum had to get the ball out, he threw it behind him, and they were unable to convert. I do believe it's going to be a low-scoring game. I don't think you're going to have to make many plays to win this game, but you're going to have to make at least one explosive play and have a great drive somewhere. And without the ability to run the ball, I don't know how you make that drive you're going to need somewhere during the course of the game to win this game against the Bears.
I'm feeling 20-13, Chicago, something like that, kind of first blush.
Perfect guess right in the neighborhood.
I'm not going to make an official prediction until Monday, but that's kind of just first glimpse kind of how I'm feeling. But let's take calls on this next, and we'll answer these questions as well. What gives you hope and what gives you fear? Redskins, Bears. 800-636-1067. Your thoughts next. Grant and Danny with Pete in for Danny.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Hopefully, you enjoyed the Titans and the Jaguars last night. No better way to kick off week three in the NFL. By the way, today, Bill Belichick cut his press conference short after questions about Antonio Brown kept pouring in.
They were talking to Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach. He goes, I got nothing on that. I coach the offensive line.
Why was he talking at all?
Because they get a day where the assistants are available.
Really?
So, yeah.
Even the non-coordinator assistants go to the podium?
Sure.
We don't do that here.
It may not have been podium. It may have been locker room availability.
Okay. I don't even think the assistants here do that. They don't do group sessions. You got to request them and do one-on-ones.
Well,
that's
maybe
cool.
When they get a new PR guy, maybe you can ask for a change in policy.
Possibly. Sounds like Tony Wiley is on his way out. First reported by 106.7 The Fan yesterday. The details at thefandc.com. There is a development, by the way, on Antonio Brown. I don't know if you saw this morning. At some point, I just wonder if the Patriots are going to say, this is not worth the pain. That these questions, the annoyance, the aggravation. Clearly, it's aggravating if you're walking off from your press conference because you're tired of the questions. You won by 30 over the Steelers without the guy when they still had Ben Roethlisberger. You won the Super Bowl last year and you get to the championship game in your conference every year without him. The latest is, I don't know if you saw this morning, but Robert Klemko, of MMQB SI came out with the big story about other people who have apparently had issues with sexual harassment and alleged assault from Antonio Brown. Well, he apparently, after that story came out, started texting one of the girls who told her story in Robert Klemko's piece. These hurtful, hateful, mean-spirited things about basically her being poor and her having all these kids and no man and whatever else he was saying. But she sent the text, I guess, to Robert Klemko, who posted them somewhere. I guess somehow the league got them now. And so her lawyer is going after Brown to the league saying, this violates your policy. You're not allowed to harass people. And so she came out and told the story about painting at his house and him coming out naked while she was painting, like at eye level, talking to her and other things that happened while she was there. She tells this story. He's mad about it. He's gone after her now saying, you're poor. You're trying to get money from me. She apparently isn't trying to get any money out of
this. Had his guy check her background.
Right.
And part of the response was she was going to a concert or Meek Mill appearance or whatever. And Antonio allegedly at that point thought maybe that she was kind of gold digging a little bit and just seeking, you know, a lot of attention and everything like that.
But
groupie. She was a groupie. That's the word he used.
If you're him at some point, don't you just go, I've gotten away with so many things. I don't know what he did, what he didn't do. At best, then this guy just mistreats women and says terrible things on text messages and an awful human being. That's at best. At worst, he's done a lot of worse things than that, okay? We don't need to legislate them on Grant and
Morally,
Danny right now.
He's corrupt, but has he committed a crime and has he done anything that violates the NFL's policy? And I think until the league feels he's, no longer good for the Shield, then they're going to let New England continue to have him on the roster and play him. That's what it comes down to.
He's no good for the Shield. I'll say that right now. But the plaintiffs would say he's done these things that are illegal. I don't know. And honestly, I don't care that much. But here's my point from a football standpoint, which is the part of this that you and I cover on this radio show. New England does not need him. Since you signed him, the rape allegations and sexual assault allegations came. Since then, he caught 3 passes. Scored a touchdown and a 43-0 win over Miami. Again, you didn't need
the
guy.
But what's the most important thing? He scored a touchdown.
Cool.
They thought they needed him, Grant.
They don't. I don't.
They're looking
to
replace the production of not having Rob Gronkowski. They think they needed him.
I don't think they think they need him. I think they just know that he makes them a little bit better. I think if he wasn't there, does Bill Belichick think 2 weeks ago they can't win the Super Bowl?
From a football perspective, though, but from a football perspective, does Antonio Brown being on the field for New England, getting passes from a guy like Tom Brady, make them that much stronger team to win the Super Bowl? Because the ultimate goal is to what? Win the Super Bowl. So from a football standpoint, as you just said, what you and I talk about on this show, what you and Danny talk about every day, does Antonio make them better from a football standpoint? Absolutely.
Yes, but the juice to me is not worth the squeeze. And that's what I'm wondering is at what point do they throw their hands up and say, let me finish real quick. What originally happened was that those things came out after he became a Patriot. Mm-hmm. That wasn't before they signed him. That was after. They had to deal with that, okay? They dealt with that all week long so that he could go catch 3 passes, including a touchdown on a push-off that should have been called, by the way. But he scored a touchdown. Cool. You won by 43-0 instead of 36-0. I hope it was worth it. Now, this week, you've got this new thing. I don't know what next week holds or the week after that, but my question is, is there a point where possibly they say, this just is not worth it to us?
Only if the league tells them that they're not going to have to.
So the league is going to have to step up and do it.
I doubt it. Absolutely doubt it.
I think you're right. I think Bill Belichick cares so little about the image and about anything but whether his team scored more points than the other team.
The owner didn't care about his image, Grant.
And I don't fault Bill Belichick.
He's going into a spa down in Florida.
Yeah.
Before the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Nowhere near the Super Bowl. The day before.
That's a weird thing. I don't care about that much, to be honest with you.
But you're asking me from an organizational perspective. I'm giving you organizational perspective. The only way he's not participating for the Patriots is if the league steps in and stops the participation.
Which I agree with. I think that's too bad, but I don't necessarily fault Belichick. His job is not to run a choir. You know, with a bunch of everyone that acts the same and acts correctly, his job's to win football games. But my point is, if this was, say, the Chiefs, and they had signed him and did this, because it's the only way they can add enough ammunition to beat the Patriots, I get it. If it was the Browns, if it was the Redskins, if it was the Texans, or name a team, The Patriots do not need the hassle. Without him, they will be in the Super Bowl. With him, they will be in the Super Bowl. I don't think it makes that much of a difference.
Look at what the Chiefs dealt with Tyreek Hill. The Browns have signed Kareem Hunt. Okay? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter unless the league tells you player A or player B is not available. If you're a person of great skill and you can help a football team is going to sign you.
But I think you're having a different conversation than the one I am. I keep saying I agree with you. I'm not saying that teams are going to step up and be moral compasses.
Right, but my point is New England's not going to say no unless the league tells them.
Understood. What I'm saying is New England does not need this guy. He is a gigantic pain in the ass. Whatever you think of him, he is and has been for years. And since they've signed him, has been nothing but a pain in the ass. Caught 3 touchdowns and a touchdown. You've also had 13 press conferences about him already, including one today. You had walked off the podium because you're tired of talking about him. You don't need him. If a team...
But they thought they needed him.
I don't think they think that.
Then why did they wouldn't have? They would not have made the move.
I disagree. I think they think he makes them better. But are you telling me that before he became available, let's say the Raiders don't cut him, Bill Belichick's walking around in the hallways at their facility going, this is the year. We're not good enough this year. Darn it, we can't win the Super Bowl with this group.
Analytically, some chum behind the scenes told him, hey, without Rob Gronkowski on the field, we're going to need something else to replace this amount of production on the field, and we're not getting it. Bill goes, oh, wait, Antonio Brown can get that production for us.
They looked okay beating the Steelers 33-3 without Gronk and without Antonio Brown.
I'm just saying.
Let's go to Chris in Hyattsville on Grant and Danny. Chris, what's going on, buddy?
Sorry, are we talking about Antonio Brown or the Redskins Bears?
A little bit of everything.
Okay, cool.
You can talk about whatever you want. What do you got?
Well, I'd like to see what Pete has to say about the Shadyside Seahawks this season and how they're doing, but I know that's probably not fun for the rest of the audience. I think there's some hope for the Redskins because – both teams have a similar quality, and that is that their offense is inept. And I think the Redskins actually have a few more playmakers on their team than the Bears do. So if somebody like McLaurin can get loose, you could get lucky and have a couple of big plays to decide the game. However, what I'd like to say is I think everybody was talking about Adrian Peterson last week. I really think the Redskins need to start majoring in the Chris Thompson business because – I feel like he's healthy again. He's dynamic. He can come out of the backfield. And I think Keenum is more comfortable with those short passes than he is with these long bombs. He's not very accurate.
And you notice, Chris, too, that they have actually – Thompson's almost 2-1 out-snapped Gyson Peterson in these games.
Yeah. But so much of the publicity was around Peterson that, like – Jay was sort of back in the corner where he kind of had to give him some snaps, and he got 25 yards.
Right. 10 for 25 for Peterson and 10 for 18 for Geis. They don't want to give Thompson a lot of carries because they don't think his body can hold up. But for the next few weeks, I got no problem with that. And get him the ball to the backfield in space and let him use the sideline as his friend and avoid some of that contact. Next on Grant and Danny, we're giving away Nats tickets, and we're ranking our top 5 NFL games of the weekend, 5-1. We'll see how closely our lists resemble one another. Studley Pete Medhurst in for Danny on G&D on the Fan on a Football Friday presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Charlestown. Every game, every bet for real sportsmen. Each and every day at 12:45, we give away tickets to see the Nationals right here on Grant and Danny. Let's do that right now. Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. You're winning a pair of tickets. You'll see the Nats take on the Indians. This is the final series of the weekend. Pete, as you mentioned, Cleveland needs this series as well. So these two teams are both going to be desperate to win baseball games.
Cleveland, an entertaining ball club to watch, too. The acquisition of Franmil Reyes has given them another power hitter. Of course, they have one of the great shortstops in the game, Francisco Lindor, a couple of good pitchers as well. So it should be a very entertaining series.
Who had a game-winning
hit for them the other night, proven to be a nice acquisition for them.
Very much
coming
so.
Over from Cincinnati.
106.7 The Fan, PenFed Credit Union, taking you out to the ballgame all season long, courtesy of PenFed Credit Union. Details at thefandc.com/contests. All right, let's rank our top 5 NFL games of the weekend. Pete, you're filling in for Danny today, so you got to have a better top 5 than me. So let's get to it. We will go 5-1. Give me your fifth best NFL game on this slate.
That would be the New Orleans Saints and Teddy Bridgewater slash Taysom Hill going up against the Seattle Seahawks. Saints, a team that have Super Bowl aspirations. How well can Teddy and Taysom keep the team afloat until Drew Brees finds his way back into the lineup? Seahawks at home, where the 12th man is always a very tough customer. I will be interested to see how the Saints play in this game. It's a tough one on the road for the two backup quarterbacks.
I've got that game on my list, but higher up the board. Number five for me, the Broncos, who are winless and not very good, and the Packers, who are 2-0 looking to get to 3-0. Lambeau Field, interconference game you don't see a whole lot. Denver could easily be 1-1. They laid an egg against the Raiders. I hated the way they played in the opener of the season. I really like their quarterback, their head coach, finally getting a shot in Vic Fangio, who you don't see this very often. The defensive minds are over 50 years old, getting their first opportunity, a la Mike Zimmer. I'm pulling for him to get right. They should have beat the Bears this past week. He went for two at the end of the game correctly and got it. Got screwed over by the refs. But they hit the road now. Matt LaFleur, former Redskins quarterbacks coach here in Washington, offensive coordinator under Sean McVay with the Rams, has the Packers at 2-0. Aaron Rodgers looking pretty sharp, wearing a wristband. And there's been a little drama with those two guys chirping at each other on the sideline. I think it's all overblown and ridiculous. But at Lambeau Field, Green Bay with a chance to really take the reins of the AFC North and get to 3-0. I like that game. Denver's going to be playing ravenous brand of football. They can't go 0-3. So that's number five on my list. Number four on my list is the Falcons and the Colts. Atlanta, similarly, Pete, at the start of the season, week one looked like a mess. They got right against the Eagles, barely. Philly completely gave them that game on Sunday Night Football last week. But one of these two teams will fall to 1-2. I have not seen a lot of the Colts this season. Andrew Luck retires. Brissett's numbers are decent, playing well. Marlon Mack's the leading rusher in the league. They're at home in a dome. I love watching Matt Ryan indoors chuck it around to Julio Jones and that passing attack. So give me 2-1 Atlanta to beat Indianapolis as my number four game.
My number four game is a fraud alert, fraud alert. Are the San Francisco 49ers who we think they are? Here's a golden opportunity. You've got the Pittsburgh Steelers, a desperate football team, but they're coming in with Mason Rudolph at quarterback and a banged-up James Conner at the running back position. So, if the 49ers get the 3-0 winning this game, do we think they are, quote, in that cruising toward that echelon of 3-0 teams in that elite category, or are they just 3-0 because they've taken advantage of Buccaneers, Bengals, and now an injury-ravaged Steelers team? And do the Steelers have it within them to go on the road and win at San Francisco with Mason Rudolph playing the quarterback position with a record of 0-2 right now?
I love that game. It was the first game out. Didn't make my list, but for both of the reasons you mentioned, I'm really interested in watching Mason Rudolph. I loved him in college.
Mm-hmm. Great player in college.
Maybe the better storyline is San Francisco because they're probably going to be 3-0 at the end of the day. And we won't know if they're good at all. Who's your number three game?
My number three game is going to shock you because it's probably not on your list because Broncos-Packers was not on mine. I'm going to go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Ooh.
The 1-0-1 Detroit Lions against the 1-1 Philadelphia Eagles. Who are these teams? Is Philadelphia the team that played who we thought like they were in the second half of the Redskins game? Or are they the team last week that just kept sputtering their wheels down in Atlanta and could never quite get the traction that they needed in that game? And who is Detroit? Are they the team that was kicking Arizona's rear end for three quarters and then watched the Cardinals come flying back in the fourth quarter to get a W? Who are these teams? That's what I want to know. And maybe I don't know if this is going to tell us more about one team than the other. But if I'm Philadelphia, I've got to play better and I've got to win this game this week. And if this is going to find out if Matt Patricia is really making any headway with this Detroit Lions team. It's a great opportunity for them on the road.
It's also a good opportunity for them, Pete, because the Eagles might not have enough guys to dress.
Didn't have practice Wednesday because they couldn't practice.
Right. I mean, everybody, and I'm not being hyperbolic, almost every skill position player on that team is questionable this week. And several of those guys aren't going to go.
Wide receiver core is hurting in Philadelphia.
Mike Shanahan once told me, he said, it's not who you play, it's when you play them.
That's right.
This is a great week to play Philadelphia at Lincoln Financial Field, 1 o'clock kick on Fox for that one. For me, my number three game, you've already talked about, the Saints and the Seahawks. I am a Taysom Hill mark, and Seattle is undefeated, and I didn't have them undefeated at this point. The Saints pulling off an upset could be evidence that maybe they're not going to completely collapse without Drew Brees. Number two for me, I got Rams and the Browns. We talked about this a little bit early on. LA's probably going to get to 3-0, but I think this game will tell us everything we need to know about Cleveland. I thought coming into the year they were going to be much improved, way better than they were last year, fringe playoff team. They didn't look like it in week one. They did handle their business in week two, but it was an uglier win than it should have been over the Jets. First time we really get to see them take on a juggernaut this weekend.
I believe for the reasons we talked about earlier, we're going to find out if they are indeed contenders in the AFC. You may win in the AFC North almost by default, but I think the Ravens are going to play well enough through the course of the year, too, to stick with them. But this is the game that's going to tell us how far or how much more the Browns have to do to get in to that elite class of teams in the National Football League.
You got that as your number two game
number
as well?
Number two game.
And then your number one has to be the same as mine, the Ravens and the Chiefs.
Well, it's not Raiders-Vikings, that's for sure. not Bills. Yes, Ravens-Chiefs. Why not? Let's see what Lamar Jackson and that Ravens revamped offense can do. And let's see if their defense is capable of stopping that Kansas City outfit on offense, because every time we watch Patrick Mahomes play 60 minutes of football, it's some of the most entertaining football we watch on a weekly basis.
Final hour of Grant and Danny kicks off in just a few. Mike Jones of the USA Today is going to spin us around the league. We'll get his thoughts on some of the proceedings from week two and what it means going into Sunday's matchups. Also, Hub Arkish joining us from Chicago to give us some thoughts on the Bears as they get ready for the Redskins. That's at 1:30 right here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.